Well, the Prime Minister has received the first of many briefings from his department over revelations his predecessor, Scott Morrison, swore himself in as the Minister for Finance, Health, Resources during the pandemic. Anthony Albanese told RM Breakfast Scott Morrison's expansion of ministerial powers may not have stopped with the three known portfolios.
The blame for this lands fairly and squarely with the former government, not just the Prime Minister. Clearly other ministers knew that this was going on. They chose not to make it public.
Have you been briefed about how many other portfolios the Prime Minister swore himself into? We know it's finance, we know it's resources, we know it's health. Is there more?
There may well be more, but I'll have more to say about that when I'm properly briefed.
And that's the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, speaking to RM Breakfast earlier this morning. And you can listen back to that full interview on the ABC Listen app. Now, his department is now investigating what exactly took place. He said, get ready, it will take some time because it's clearly been very difficult to get to the bottom of it all. Constitutional law expert Professor Anne Toomey joins me now. Welcome, Anne.
Good morning.
So what's going on here? Now that we know a little bit more, we clearly are going to find out a whole lot more. The Prime Minister said to me that he thinks this is squarely the responsibility of the government. But last night, Malcolm Turnbull told 7:30 that he was astonished the Governor-General was a party to it. Was the Governor-General a party to it?
Well, the Governor-General, it seems, did make appointments of Mr. Morrison to those other portfolios. But what we don't know, and I think before we dump on the Governor-General, we need to know more, but we don't even know that the Governor-General was aware that this was being kept secret. We don't know whether he was aware that other cabinet ministers didn't know, that the relevant ministers concerned didn't know. If he was aware of that, it probably would have been appropriate for him to at least raise a concern with the Prime Minister and say, well, is this wise, Prime Minister? Maybe you should consult your cabinet, Prime Minister. It would be appropriate to make these things public, Prime Minister. I mean, there are examples of that in the past. Sir Paul Hasluck, for example, when a Prime Minister tried to bounce him into agreeing to send troops off to Papua New Guinea, knowing, because he was tipped off by the Defence Minister, that the Cabinet hadn't been consulted, said, go back and talk to your Cabinet. So that kind of thing can happen. But the bottom line is that the Prime Minister, the Governor-General in the end acts on the advice of the Prime Minister of the day. And unless the Prime Minister was requiring him to do something that was clearly unlawful, then ultimately the Governor-General has to act on the advice of the Prime Minister. So it's not so much the Governor-General's fault. And we don't even know if he was aware that the secrecy was going on.
And obviously now it brings into question our system, a little bit like the dual citizenship, I feel, raised some questions around our system, something that we hadn't really dealt with, and all of a sudden there was a sort of tsunami of issues. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, told me in our interview, it's on the ABC Listen app, but he said that they would now be finding out exactly what happened and then trying to rectify the situation. Does it look like there might need to be reform or change?
I think it would be a good idea. There is a lack of clarity in relation to these issues. So if you actually start going hunting to try and work out which minister is responsible for what, the legislation doesn't help you because it just uses a generic the minister, because they don't want to have to change the legislation every time ministers change their portfolios. Fair enough. So then you go to the Acts Interpretation Act and it says, well, you find out by looking at the administrative arrangements orders. So you go find them, they're on the Federal Register of Legislation, but they just tell you what departments are responsible for and then what the relevant portfolio minister, what acts they're responsible for. But it doesn't tell you who the portfolio minister is, and then you've got to go to a separate place to find that, which is sort of published lists that are provided by the government, some of which are also on the Federal Register of Legislation. But frankly, it would make it a lot easier if all of this stuff was just put in one place so you knew precisely which minister administered which act or which parts of acts, because we do have a situation where we have these large portfolios where you have senior ministers and junior ministers and assistant ministers, etc., and it is unclear and opaque as to who exercises the powers. Now, normally they just divvy it up between them, But that's normally not made public, so the public doesn't know. So I think there is an opportunity here to formalise this and maybe even put it into law requirements that certain things do have to be published in order to avoid this sort of thing happening again.
The Prime Minister said people in government are searching for documents that saw Scott Morrison sworn in secretly to various ministry portfolios. He also revealed to me that it could be more than these three that we now know about. Why is there this? I try to channel the average person, so I will. How can we not be able to find the documents by now? These are departments, powerful departments of the Commonwealth. Why is this so difficult?
Well, I guess it depends on how it was done. So I'm guessing it wasn't done through the Federal Executive Council. So normally things go through Executive Council and there's a huge amount of documentation. It would go through Prime Minister and Cabinet and go through the sort of various Cabinet areas and then go to the Official Secretary of the Governor General and people check off on it, etc. I'm guessing what happened here is that it was all bypassed in order to keep it all secret. And so it was just direct relationships between the Prime Minister directly to the Governor General. And that may have led to sort of falling outside of the ordinary processes of government. And again, that's another problematic thing. So to just give you another little example, in New South Wales many, many years ago, you might remember there was a minister who was crook, who was being paid money to approve people being let out of jail early. Eventually went to jail for it himself, I think. Anyway, the problem there was because the minister was advising the governor directly and it wasn't going through the whole system of executive council. And that's why they changed the system in New South Wales to ensure that these things went through executive council so no minister could go rogue and do weird stuff on their own. So again, I think they need to have a bit more of a think about that in Canberra, about making sure that these types of things go through the formality of executive council. So we've got all the records, all the T's crossed, the I's are dotted and everything's there and you're not just doing stuff on your own.
If you're just tuning in, this is Radio National Breakfast. Patricia Carvalis with you and our guest is constitutional law expert Anne Toomey. And do we know what implications these unprecedented arrangements may have had on legal decisions made by the former government? Are we going to now expect kind of a lot of legal challenges potentially that may be costly to the Commonwealth?
Well, again, we just don't know the facts. The only fact we know is of one decision made by the Prime Minister exercising this power to the surprise of the person who was in the ministerial role. Given that the other ministers, the finance minister, for example, didn't know this had happened at all, seems unlikely that the Prime Minister exercised any power under in relation to the finance ministry, because then the finance minister presumably would have found out. So my guess is that the Prime Minister didn't actually exercise any of these powers that he got, other than that particular one in relation to mining, and that's already in the courts anyway. So it may just be limited to that one particular occasion. But no doubt people are going to start trawling through and trying to ascertain whether the Prime Minister actually did exercise any other powers and how this fits in with the laws and, you know, statutory conferral of executive power, etc. So certainly people will go looking and trawling, but whether they find anything more than that one particular occasion is probably pretty doubtful.
Some listeners, not all, there's a variety of views, but think this is hysteria, overreaction to this. What's your view? Is this a really important issue that we should be treating the way that it is being treated by the media, a serious issue that raises significant constitutional and democratic issues?
It's a twofold thing. So in terms of actually what happened, you know, the mere fact of a Prime Minister being able to exercise powers in other portfolios of itself is not particularly significant. I mean, it happens all the time when people are away or are sick, etc. Okay, so that in itself is not the problem. The problem here is the secrecy side of it. And so that's the bit that everybody's getting agitated about, and rightly so. The bottom line is that, you know, there's a fundamental democratic principle here, and that is that, you know, we elect our representatives into Parliament and they form a government, and it's a responsible government. They're responsible to Parliament and they're responsible to us for the decisions that they make. But part of that involves people being able to know precisely who is has this power, who is the power conferred upon them to exercise, you know, these sorts of, you know, roles under statute. And to be hiding that from the people is concerning. It shouldn't happen in a democracy. And it does mean that, you know, it shows us that our small c constitution, which is the one that, you know, is based on all the practices and the conventions, that it can be upended if people go and decide to do, you know, unorthodox things. You know, we don't have strict rules about this. The Constitution doesn't say expressly, and by the way, when you appoint a minister to a portfolio, it has to be made public in a particular place. Well, you know, maybe, and we're seeing this in the UK and we're seeing this in the US, where we've got governments that take the view that they're all powerful and disrespect convention, disrespect parliament, disrespect the courts. We've been seeing that happening in the rest of the world, and we don't want that to happen here. And so I can see why concerns are being raised about this general disrespect for transparency and process and convention and practice and all those things that keep the Constitution operating. So from a broader perspective, yes, it is a worry. We just don't want to go down that path. But if you're looking at it at the micro level, did it actually, you know, cause any major problems? Probably not in practice, but in principle, was it problematic? Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Anne.
Thank you.
Constitutional law expert, Professor Anne Toomey.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.